try to give a little, somewhat of a brief overview to the mitzvah of Yeshiva Basukah. The Torah tells us Basukah's Teishu Shivas Yamim, so the key word, of course, is the word Teishu, which the Torah Shvapeh interprets to mean Teishu Kein Taduru, that one has to observe the mitzvah of Sukkah, one has to be Yoshev in the Sukkah, the same way that one is Dar in one's home during the course of the year. So that's the key phrase. That's the official translation of the word Teishu, Teishu Kein Taduru. And many of the details of the Sukkah revolve around that phrase. What exactly does Kein Taduru mean? So the Gemara to Masech HaSukkah, the second parak, that usually those activities that a person does in one's home have to be done in the Sukkah. One, just as one normally eats in one's house, one normally sleeps in one's house. So Achila and Mishtiyah and Shena, those are the normal house activities. So those activities have to be done in the Sukkah during the whole week of Sukkot. If a person does not choose to do an act of Dira, so a person chooses not to eat, a person chooses not to sleep, so then they're not mechuyev to do that in the Sukkah. But if a person chooses to do an act of Dira, chooses to eat, chooses to sleep, so then if a person does that outside of the Sukkah, that's considered to be a bittul mitzvah min HaTorah. What exactly is considered to be eating that obligates you to eat in the Sukkah? So the Mishnah tells us that oichlin achilas aroi chutz l'sukkah, that one is allowed to eat little snacks, kinds of foods outside of the Sukkah. Why is that? So Tosfos explains, it's also based on Teishu Kein Taduru, because just as a person usually associates eating in one's house, that's talking about eating a meal, a little snack. A person grabs a snack all the time. He grabs something on the run. So since just as the rest of the year, you don't necessarily eat your food of snacks in the house, so too, when it comes to eating in the Sukkah, so one is not mechuyev to eat an achilas aroi within the Sukkah. That's not considered to be a bittul of Teishu Kein Taduru. What constitutes an achilas aroi? What constitutes an achilas keva? So the Gemara explains that there are two factors that go into determining whether any given achila is an achilas keva, which requires a sukkah min haTorah, or whether it's an achilas aroi, which is exempt from sukkah. This is what one is eating. So certain types of foods lend themselves to more achilas keva than others. So the Gemara says that if you have bread, bread is a type of food that's usually associated with a kvius. That's potentially achilas keva. And the Gemara is a chiddush that even if it's not actual bread, even if it's what's called mine tagima, so mine tagima also could potentially be chayavim in sukkah. What are mine tagima? That's a big one, like a rishonim. Some rishonim say that mine tagima means foods that usually accompany bread, things you make a sandwich out of, say a piece of fish, a piece of meat, a piece of cheese or something. That's what some rishonim say. And the Rush writes, no, that mine tagima means mizonos types of foods, a piece of kugel or a bowl of cereal, things like that. Those are considered to be mina tagima. That's the ikra din. That's what we pask in ikra din and Shulchan Aruch, like the Rush, that the only types of foods that are chayav and sukkah are either bread or mina tagima. Mina tagima meaning mizonos types of foods. Lechat chila, some folks can say we try to be machma for the other rishonim as well, for a bit of Paris, other rishonim who say that mina tagima can even meat and fish, etc. But that's more betaras chumra. Mikra din, so only bread is chayav and sukkah or mina tagima, which we associate with being mizonos. Quantitatively, how much bread or how much mina tagima do you have to eat in order to be chayav in sukkah? So the Gemara explains that if you have less than a kebeit tzavayit, if you just have an egg's worth of bread, so even though it's qualitatively a type of food that's your kevei on, but since you lamaisa weren't kevei on it, so that's still not considered to be achilas keva. So the shear is not a kezayis, the shear is achilas kebeit tzavayot. So when it comes to bread, if a person has less than a piece of bread, less than the size of a kebeit tzavayot, so then he wouldn't be chayav to eat in the sukkah. What about mina tagima? What's the shear for mina tagima? So that was a machlekes haposkim. So Magen Avraham said, that's the same shear. Same way that more than a kebeit of bread obligates one in sukkah, so more than a kebeit of whatever you think mina tagima are, whether you think it means meat, whether you think it means pasta, means cereal, whatever you think it is, so that's the same shear. Now the poskim say no. Other poskim say that in order to create a shear kavias for mina tagima, it's not enough just to have quantitatively a kebeitza. It has to be eaten in a more kavua fashion. What constitutes more of a kavua fashion? So let's say a person eats together with a lot of people, so that's considered to be more kavua. Or a person is really making this into his meal, so that's considered to be more kavua. But if you just have a snack by yourself in the middle of the night of a bowl of cereal or something, so according to many poskim, that wouldn't technically be chayav in sukkah. So again, so there are two factors that go into determining what exactly has to be eaten in the sukkah. There's a question in terms of what type of food you're eating, and then number two, how much of that food are you eating? The Mishnah records that lechatchila many of the Tanaim used to be makpid to try to have everything in the sukkah, even a cup of water they'll be makpid not to have outside the sukkah. That's only a midas chasid. That's not mikra din, but those who follow that, that's a beautiful, wonderful thing. That's not technically required. in addition to eating in the sukkah, so the Gemara quotes a braisa that says that one is obligated in a Torah to sleep in the sukkah as well. Because it says, Basukkah's teshva, teshva's kein taduru, and usually we sleep in our homes. So that's considered to be an obligation in a Torah. The Gemara says that sleeping is even more chaber than eating, because when it comes to sleeping, there's no such thing as a shena saroi, because even a very, very small nap can sometimes give a person, wake a person up to continue morning seder or something. So that's considered to be enough of a kvius, even though it's, in terms of amount of time, it's very, very small. But any sleeping outside the sukkah is considered to be a bittul mitzvah in a Torah, unless one is justified in doing so. So what would be some justifications for perhaps not sleeping in the sukkah? So the Ramah quotes in Ulcha Sukkah that there was a practice that existed in Eastern Europe that a lot of people didn't sleep in the sukkah. So only the big medachik, the people who were very, very big, you know, medachik mitzvahs would sleep in the sukkah. Yeah, Hamonam weren't sleeping in the sukkah. So the Ramah is trying to justify, why should that be so? Where did that minute come from? Against the Gemara of the Pharisees, you have to sleep in the sukkah. So the Ramah offers two possibilities to defend that practice. One possibility the Ramah writes is that in Eastern Europe they didn't have private sukkahs. They didn't have that much land in Eastern Europe. Those who've ever been in Krakow, so Krakow, the way it looks today, the Jewish part of Krakow was the same as it was in the days of the Ramah. The whole thing is like three blocks, so you didn't have so much land. So people didn't have the ability to build private sukkahs, so they would have communal sukkahs. They'd have a bun sukkah in front of the shul, a sukkah in the little street or something. They would have these communal sukkahs. So the Ramah writes that, how are you going to sleep in the communal sukkah? The Gemara says that Teishvu came to the room, and Dira has to be Kishvu Ishto, that normally you sleep, a married man sleeps next to his wife, so he's going to bring his wife to the sukkah, so we're going to have 20 couples sleeping in the wives in the sukkah, so Chabiyah Mamasha breach its knees. So he says, that's impossible, you can't do that. So since it's impossible to fulfill Teishvu, can't do it properly, but to tell all the men to go sleep in the sukkah, and the women should sleep at home. So the Ramah writes, that's not Teishvu Kein Taduru either. So there's no way physically to fulfill Teishvu Kein Taduru if you're in a situation where it's not tzanua for the women to sleep there. So according to the Ramah, let's say I have a private sukkah, but my wife doesn't want to sleep outside. She's cold. She's not interested in sleeping outside with the squirrels and the raccoons. So she wants to sleep indoors. So what should I do? She's not chayavis in the mitzvah. It's a mitzvah that says she has mangrava. So now for me to go and sleep outside, my wife's not there. So that wouldn't be a fulfillment of Teishvu Kein Taduru. So according to that Ramah, as long as your wife doesn't want to sleep in the sukkah, so then technically one wouldn't be obligated to sleep in the sukkah. Then the Ramah quotes an additional reason. He says he thinks maybe the reason why people were very lenient not to sleep in the sukkah in Eastern Europe is because it was sub-zero. It was freezing cold in Eastern Europe. You go to places where the Jews lived northern parts of Europe, it was not freezing. So the Ramah writes that it was mitztayer, and the Gemara says that mitztayer is potter in a sukkah. If it was so mitztayer, why were they eating in the sukkah? So the answer is to eat. You can eat and throw a couple of coats on and eat quickly, and then you go out. But to sleep the whole night there, it's mamash, you wake up, it's an icicle. So the Ramah writes, you're not mechuyev to do that. Those are the two defenses that the Ramah has. So the question is, how does this play out for us now in America, in Tavshinai and Zion? Are these two defenses legitimate or not? So many poskim disagree with the Ramah. The Vilna Gaon strongly disagree with the first kula of the Ramah, that Teishvu Kein Taduru means you have to be together with your wife. There's no such din, no such gemara, no such halacha. Teishvu Kein Taduru just means that tells you what you have to do in the sukkah, and that tells you how much you have to eat in the sukkah, and tells you a different dinim in sukkah. But we don't find the Teishvu Kein Taduru is a pait there in sukkah if your wife doesn't join you. So the Gra, another Achareinim, disagree with that Ramah. The second, the kula of the Ramah, may or may not apply, depends on the metzias. So if you live in a place, if it's a time of the year where it's mamish freezing cold outside, so then takva would be mitztayer. If a person's not so cold, they get a heated sukkah and throw a couple extra blankets and sleeping bags on, so they're not so cold. So then they wouldn't have a mitztayer. So again, you have to size up case by case. So those who follow the Ramah's minhag, the first side of the Ramah, the married men are potter, so good. So then the wife doesn't want to come out, so then the man is potter and finish relying on the Ramah. Those who don't want to rely on the first answer of the Ramah would have to assess day by day, night by night, year by year, what the status is in terms of whether it's actually cold enough to be a concern in terms of its tar potter in a sukkah. There is a comment that the Ramah has. Ramah is a big chumrah in Ulcha Sukkah, where the Ramah quotes from the Rav Yah that, let's say I have a sukkah that I'm comfortable eating in, but I'm not so comfortable sleeping in it. Why am I not comfortable sleeping in it? Because it's dangerous to sleep in that sukkah. So the Ramah writes, if you build a sukkah in a place where you can't use it for sleeping because it's dangerous, so then you're not yaitzei the mitzvah of achila b'sukkah either. Why? Because that's not called a bayis, that's not called a dira. Who would have a meshugan, who would ever build a house that you can only use for some purposes, not for other purposes? So the Ramah writes that Teish we're going to do is not just the din in the mitzvah segavra, it's a din in the chefta shel sukkah. A sukkah that's not ra'uya to al tzrachim, to all the needs of the sukkah, wouldn't qualify as a sukkah in the first place. So many achareim disagree with this Ramah. Chacham Tzvi said he doesn't think the Ramah is correct. He said he thinks there's a ferish raya from the Gemara against him. The Gemara says that the minimum size of a sukkah is 7 tvachim by 7 tvachim. How is the guy going to fit into 7 tvachim by 7 tvachim? So the Gemara says that an average guy takes up about 6 tvachim by 6 tvachim. 6 tvachim this way, and 6 tvachim that way, depending on how much he ate in the first days of Yontif. So he's an average guy, needs about 6 tvachim by 6 tvachim. And then he needs a little small table, so he needs a little 7 tvachim, and they have to put down a little tray, a little plate, something to be able to put his food on. The 7 tvachim by 7 tvachim is not that big, but the kosher you can eat there. The Chacham Tzvi said, how are you going to sleep there? How in the world is a guy going to sleep in a 7x7 sukkah? He's going to sleep standing up? He's going to sleep curdled up? How is he going to fit? It's going to be impossible. So the Chacham Tzvi from here, you can build a sukkah that's royal l'achila, not royal l'sheina. So there are two different halachas. The Gemara's not saying you're going to sleep in the sukkah, you're going to sleep in another sukkah. But right now, you want to eat in the sukkah, so this sukkah is a kosher sukkah. So Chacham Tzvi quotes other poskim who say that they never heard such a thing, that a sukkah has to be royal l'choldover. But according to the Ramah, that a sukkah has to be royal l'choldover, then we have a problem. So how could the Ramah justify not sleeping in the sukkah because it's too cold, but yet we're going to eat in the sukkah, and so it's not cold enough to eat, but it's cold, too cold to sleep. Marashach, if it's really so cold that you can't sleep there, and then it's always sukkah, it's not considered to be a chefs of a sukkah altogether. So what's pshat in the Ramah? So the Mishnah Berurah quotes two possibilities. So the Mishnah Berurah says that the Medrash Amrum, that Ramah meant that if you have a sukkah that's not royal l'shein, it's not royal l'achil either, that's if you had the opportunity to build it to be roy for everything. Is that a choice, to build a sukkah in a safe place or to build a dafka in a place where it's dangerous? So what meshugana would ever build a house that way if you have an option to build a house one way or the other way? So normal people build a house in a way that's it. Let's say I live in a place that there's no way for me to build a sleepable house. So I'm going to eat in the street also. So I'll build for whatever I can. So whatever I can, I can. Whatever I can't, I can't. So the Mishnah Berurah writes that if a person builds a sukkah in a place where he could have built it in a normal way to fulfill all the dinim of Teishu, can do any dafka chooses not to, so that's a chisar, that's not called a house. Shein Kain, if a person builds in a cold climate, what do you want for the guy? He does as best as he can. He lives in the North Pole. To build a sukkah that at least he can eat in, even though he won't be able to sleep in. Then the Mishnah Berurah quotes another reason to defend this Ramah. He says that when you have a sukkah that's cold, it's still royal l'sheina. If you had enough blankets, we were on the shayna. You're not mechuyif to go buy 100 blankets before sukkahs. You're allowed to live your life normally in sukkahs. You're not mechuyif to sleep under 16 levels of coats. But in theory, you could. In theory, you could make your sukkah into a way that's tach a warm enough. And so it's usually this Mishnah Berurah that's quoted to defend the practice that a lot of people have, that they built sukkahs in places. A person lives in a neighborhood, not the safest neighborhood, that lives in Washington Heights. So he builds a sukkah and eats in the sukkah, and then when it comes to sleeping, he gets very, very weary. He doesn't want to sleep in the sukkah. He's nervous to sleep in the sukkah. He's afraid it's too dangerous. So maybe that whole sukkah should be puzzle. So the puzzle can say, no, that's not puzzle. It's not puzzle for both reasons. Because first of all, he has no choice. I mean, he lives more time. He doesn't have to leave his house. He lives in the Heights, so he's allowed to build a sukkah where he lives. So anywhere that he's going to build is going to be dangerous. So that's still considered to be a bias to the best of his ability. And the Eidei Shalom, one can argue, especially in Bizman Hazeh, in most places, even a place that's not the safest neighborhood, you could do something to sleep there that would be safe. You could hire an armed guard. You hired a guy to sit there with a gun the whole night. You would be perfectly comfortable. I would sleep there even in a bad neighborhood. So that's what they do in Washington Heights on the other side of town. So a lot of people sleep in the communal sukkah on Bennett Avenue, and there's a guard there the whole night. People feel that they're comfortable, so that's okay. So that's considered to be. Even though, let's say, for whatever reason, I'm not going to sleep at night, I can still eat in that sukkah, because that sukkah, in theory, is still royal l'sheina. The Gemara tells us, Mishnah tells us in Masechet Sukkah, in the second barak, that when it starts to rain, so one is potter from sukkah. Why is one potter from sukkah when it starts to rain? So the Pasht said the Varmiz is because it's mitzdayer, because the person is not very uncomfortable. He's sitting in the rain, it's raining in, it's not the most comfortable way of eating. So mitzdayer potter in a sukkah. So the Vilna Gaon writes that he thinks there's another reason why you potter from sukkah, not just the din in the Maisa Gavra, that it's mitzdayer potter in a sukkah, but it's a din in the Cheftz as well, that it's lav shmei sukkah law, that a sukkah that can't hold its own, sukkah that can't protect you from the basic element of rain is not called a sukkah. A sukkah is supposed to be a lashon schach, supposed to protect you itself. If it can't serve that, the rain's coming right through. So that's oy sukkah. That's not going to be a sukkah altogether. So there may be enough gemina whether you say that you put them in a sukkah because it's a p'tur in the gav or the p'tur in the cheftz. We'll see in a moment what possible enough geminas are. The Yerushalmi says that if a person decides to eat in the sukkah in the rain, so that's not, he doesn't get any schar whatsoever. That's not a chumra. That's a silliness. It's foolishness. The Poskim quote the Yerushalmi says, "Kol apotver davi oser nikra hedyot." If a person is potter from a mitzvah and they go ahead and they do it anyway, so that's a garnish. That's not considered to be anything. The Chayyadam points out that even though if it rains, if a person goes out and sits in the sukkah in the rain, so he doesn't get any schar whatsoever, because when you're mitzvah, so you're potter. So the Chayyadam says that there are actually two different types of mitzvah in halacha. Sometimes it's a good idea to sit in the sukkah anyway, and sometimes it's a silly idea to sit in the sukkah. What's the difference? So the Chayyadam says that sometimes you have mitzvah, which is b'shas ha-mitzvah. As I'm sitting in the sukkah, it's mamish raining. As I'm sitting in the sukkah, it's freezing. As I'm sitting in the sukkah, it's a terrible skunk just sprayed all over the sukkah. So as I'm sitting in the sukkah, it's a terrible, terrible, uncomfortable experience. So the Chayyadam writes, for a guy to sit in the sukkah under those circumstances, mamish a waste of time. He should go back to the house and enjoy his yontif. But let's say I have a situation where I'm technically potter from sukkah because there was a big mitzvah for me to get to the sukkah. It means there would have been a big, big hassle for me to get to the sukkah. Let's say Moshe, the Rama writes, let's say I have my candles lit in my sukkah on yontif, and then let's say it's Shabbos, it's Shabbos Chlamoy, my candles are lit, and all of a sudden the wind comes, blows out my candles, and the sukkah is pitch black. So it's going to be very, very, very hard for me to eat in the sukkah. I can't see my food, I'm going to drown, I'm bump into each other. So the Rama writes, if it's star, you put them in the sukkah, you're not mechuyav. If it's yontif, you can light a candle, but if it's Shabbos, you're stuck, so you can't eat in the sukkah. So the Rama writes, why don't you just go to your neighbor's sukkah? So the Rama writes, that's a hassle, it's a big pain in the neck. I have to go pick up my pots and pans and do my food, and it's embarrassing. I have to go schlep sukkah over to the neighbor's house. So I'm not mechuyav to do that. That's called mitzvah potter b'sukkah. So the Chayyadam writes, Reza would say, listen, I'm willing to do that. I'm willing to be mitzvah. I'm willing to schlep all my stuff. So if you do that, but by the time you get to your neighbor, still be a taka, very comfortable, unless you don't like the neighbor, unless his family doesn't sing nicely, so it's mitzvah to sit there. But if b'shas yeshiva b'sukkah, you taka, okay. It took you 20 minutes of a lot of discomfort to get there. It's a pain in the neck. Your wife screaming at you, and you're schlepping all the food with all your kids and everything. So it was a real hassle. The halacha didn't require you to do that. But once you did it, so now I'm sitting by Revach. Now I'm having a great time sitting in my neighbor's well-lit, warm, dry sukkah. So the Chayyadam writes, that's a gevaldika thing. So that's takamidus chasidus. That would be a nice thing to do, to volunteer. Because since b'shas ma'isa that you're sitting in the sukkah, you're getting a mitzvah. Because that's still considered to be a yeshiva basukah. So sometimes mitzvah is something you don't have to fight mitzvah, and sometimes you should try to overcome mitzvah. So if it's mitzvah b'shas ma'isa, there's no reason to fight it. Just go into the house and enjoy the rest of the yontif. If it's a mitzvah, that's the prelude to the sitting in the sukkah, but by the time you get to the sukkah itself, so your mamish, you're in good shape. So that would be okay. Some of those of you, yeah.
If you follow the gong, then if it's raining and you stay in the sukkah, you're eating in what's not a sukkah.
Right.
And it's asr.
Why is it asr?
It's not a sukkah, you just said it's not a sukkah.
No, but I'm potter from the sukkah. It means when the Gura says that if there's no sukkah available, so then I'm potter from the sukkah. The Mishnah.
Didn't he say that it makes it into sukkah?
Right, we're out there from sukkah at that time. The Mishnah is the favorite that once it starts to rain, you can eat in the house also. So there is a big machlekes in Rishonim whether this p'tur of rain or mitzvah, whether all these p'turim apply throughout the week of Sukkot, or whether there's a distinction between the first night or the chutzpah's first two nights and the subsequent days of Sukkot. Why should there be any difference? So the Mishnah quotes in the Nafcham Zayin, Masechet Sukkah, Machlekes of Eliezer and the Chachamim, how to translate the phrase Teishu Kein Tadur. What are we exactly supposed to do in the Sukkah in terms of eating? So for Eliezer, at least at one stage, and Eliezer backed out, but at an early stage, Eliezer had a Shita, that Teishu Kein Tadur means just as a normal person eats two meals a day, a regular day, eat two meals a day, Sudas Boke and Sudas Erev. Lunch was never on the radar screen. Nobody ate lunch. Lunch was invented in Europe a couple hundred years ago. People used to eat in the morning before they went out to start to work, and they would eat when they came back. So people ate sudas b'ok of Erev. That's why on Shabbos you're supposed to have a third sudah. The third sudah is to make Shabbos special, above and beyond the regular two meals. So Eliezer said, on a regular day, you eat two meals in your house. So on Sukkot, you should eat two meals in the sukkah. So therefore, Eliezer says, you should eat 14 meals in the sukkah. And the Chacham said, no, that's not what Teishu Kein Tadur means. Taduru doesn't mean you're mechuyav to be dar in the sukkah. What Taduru means is, if you want to be dar, then you have to be dar in the sukkah. If you choose not to be dar, namely you choose not to eat a meal, so don't eat a meal. So live on potato chips, live on fruit, live on things that are not obligated in the sukkah. It's not a problem, said the Chacham. So we pass like the third day Chalamar, the guy doesn't want to eat anything, so it doesn't eat anything. He's not mechuyav to eat in the sukkah. If he goes to the sukkah and he sits in the sukkah, he gets a mitzvah, but he's not technically mechuyav to do so. So then the Gemara asks, Yehachi, according to the Rabbanan, but they say that on the first night also, on the first night of Sukkot, you also don't have to eat in the Sukkah. The Gemara says, no, that's different. The first night is different because there's a Gzeri Shav that we have Chemisha Asr and Pesach. Just as on Pesach, you have to eat matzah. You don't have a choice whether to eat matzah or not. You have to eat matzah. There are different matzahs. So too, you have to eat in the Sukkah on the first night of Sukkot. So there's a big machlekes in Rishonim how to understand that nuchiyah. When the Torah says that carrying over from matzah to sukkah, you have to eat in the sukkah on the first night of sukkah, is that basically a mitzvah of yeshiva basukkah? There are two parts of yeshiva basukkah. There's yeshiva basukkah the rest of the week, that's almost like a rishus. Not a rishus in the sense of that if you eat bread, you have to do it in the sukkah. That's not a rishus, but you don't have to eat the bread in the first place. So do we say that there are really two parts of sukkah? The sukkah of all week, sukkah of Leil Chamisha Asar B'Tishrei, or do we say no, that there's really only one mitzvah of sukkah, that's the whole week. So why do I have to eat in the sukkah the first night? That's a new din called Chamisha Asar, Chamisha Asar B'Tishrei, new halacha. But on Leil Pesach you have to eat a kezayis of dogon, of matzah, and Leil Sukkot you have to eat a kezayis of dogon in a sukkah, but it's not really part of Teshu, the sukkah's Teshu Shivas Yom, it's a separate mitzvah. So my nafkamin ladina, so the Rishonim write b'feirush, Rechapa nafkamin, whether the Peturim of sukkah apply in the first night. So some Rishonim say that the regular Peturim don't apply in the first night, because the regular Peturim of rain and discomfort, etc., are all derived from the phrase of Teshu Kein Tanduru. So of course they have to be shown, those didim don't apply to the first night, because it's not a mitzvah of Teshu Kein Tanduru, it's a mitzvah of Achilas Dagon, Belel Chamisha Asar. They don't apply to matzah. Let's say a guy, let's say it's raining in my house. I'm sitting in by the Seder and all of a sudden it's starting to rain. My ceiling's leaking. So don't say, oh, sure, it's raining into my living room, so I'm potter. Maybe if you machmer and gebracht, so you have to make sure your matzah doesn't get wet. Okay, fine. But in terms of potter and matzah, so you have to eat the matzah anyway. So you have to Rishonim say you have to eat the sukkah the first night of sukkahs also, even if it's raining. It's tire, so what? And the other half of the Rishonim say no, that it's potter. It's the same potter as any other potter. Teishu came to do a potter even on the first night. So how do we pass in the halacha? So the Ramah writes that one should eat in the sukkah on the first night, even in the rain. So the later poskim say we treat this as a sveik of the dina. We're not sure what that halacha is. So therefore, if by some chance chas shalom rains on the first night of sukkahs, so with the practice, the poskim write is as follows: that a person should make kiddush in the sukkah and eat a piece of challah in the sukkah, but without a bracha leishiv b'sukkah, because since he went to have to reshine him, you're not yotzei altogether. It's mamash a waste of time. So you couldn't make a leishiv b'sukkah, and then after you eat the piece of challah, then you can go into the house and enjoy the rest of the meal. And then later at night, by some chance it stops raining, so you should go back to the sukkah after it stops raining, because according to the first half of the Rishonim, you weren't Yotze, because you wait at a time when you were Potter. So for some chance it stops raining before morning, so then you should go back to the Sukkah and wash again and eat another piece of Challah, and then you can make a Leishu B'Sukkah B'Matar Shach. Either you Yotze the Chiro the first night, or it's no less than any other day of Chol HaMoed. So that's the protocol that the Mishnah Berurah quotes from the later Poskim. That's what a person should do. There are different practices about whether a person should wait or not, how long should you wait to see whether the rain's going to stop. Those are nuances of shades of questions. But the Ika practice is that we treat it as a Sveik and Adina. Therefore, once you eat the first Kazai at the beginning, and then without a Brach, and then hope for the best, the rain stops later, and go back. So it has to be rain enough that if you have to try to be mishai, that if I was sitting in my living room and my living room started to leak, my roof would leak, but I pick up my whole table, move all my kids out and go into another place to eat. If I would just say, listen, it's not worth the hassle, it's just put on my rain hat and that's what you, someone's been the schach's dripping a little bit, so I put on my rain hat, I barely bekoshi feel anything, I put in a coat, I put in a rain hat, someone says, it doesn't bother you. If it's pouring, then it's hard to eat a meal. But if it's just dripping a little bit, it's usually not so bad. There is a big question, the poskim, just how serious we take this comparison from Sukkot to Pesach. The Ramah quotes that just as the Mishnah says in Aver Pesachim, lo yochel adam asher techshach, that you're supposed to eat until it gets dark on Pesach night. So Tosfos interpreted that Mishnah to mean that there's one opinion that says that you have to wait until it gets dark on Pesach night. Regular Shabbos and Yontif, you could probably eat your Suda maybe Yod Yom, according to most Rishonim, but on Pesach night, there's a din of Balai Lazev. After Chamatzos, you have to eat Mamash at night. So the Tosfos writes that on Pesach night, you can't stop the Seder early. You got to wait until it gets Mamash Teis Kecham to make Kiddush. So the Ramah writes in Uchos Sukkah that we follow that same practice when it comes to Sukkot. But since the Chiyuv is learned out from Pesach, so it's not going to be any different than Pesach. You have to wait until Teis Kichon. That's why the minig in many shuls is that they wait to Daven Meir on the first night of Sukkah. It's the same way they wait to Daven Meir on the first night of Pesach. I remember several years ago, so it was a very touch and call rain it was thought about to rain on the first night, and wanted to make sure everybody got into the sukkah before. So I remember right before Mincha, so I went to check the 15-minute weather forecast. You know, give me every 15-minute angle with a big enough community Ladina, enough community whether I should give a drasha or not. So because of the weather forecast, I didn't give the drasha. And we daven my very early. We daven earlier than we normally on the sukkah night. And I told everyone to run home quickly to eat. So mamish we ate bekoshi mamish at the earliest taste kechavim we ate in the sukkah, and I think at hamotzi already start thundering. You know? So we mamish we got it in. Some of the other shuls in town that the rabbi gave a drasha, they daven mayer be calm and relaxed. Tachlis they blew the mitzvah. They had to wait till 5 hours later till the rain stopped. So you have to play your figure out how to play the game properly. Okay, good. Anyway. Then the Poskim quote also that just as Erev Pesach we don't eat in the afternoon because we want to make sure to eat the matzah teyavon, so to Erev Sukkot we can do the same thing. We try not to eat too much Erev Sukkot in the afternoon also. That should be the teyavon. The Mishnah tells us that there are a few individuals who are potter from the mitzvah of Sukkah. One person who's potter from Sukkah is Isaac b'mitzvah. So not all that different than any other Sukkah. So the person who's Isaac b'mitzvah is potter from Kriyishma, he's potter from Sukkah. So there are a lot of different scenarios where sometimes a person could end up technically being potter from Minnesota. Let's say a person is Meshamsha Sachoila, a person's taking care of a sick child or a patient or whatever it is. So at the time that he's being Isaac in the Sukkah mitzvah, he doesn't have to be concerned with eating in the sukkah. And the Mishnah says that holchi drachim apturim in a sukkah. The person is traveling, so they're potter in a sukkah. Why? Because just as when a person travels during the year, so I leave my house during the year and I go somewhere, I don't think twice about leaving my house once in a while. So too, you're allowed to leave your sukkah. If you want to go somewhere, you're allowed to go. So the tashas in the Gemara is that the holchi drachim is potter even with holchi dvar rishos. So Rav Moshe writes in the tshuva that he doesn't think that it's an absolute dvar rishos. He thinks that has to be some kind of justification for going on this trip dafka in the middle of Chol HaMoed Sukkos. So if you're going to some kind of a little bit of a tzarcha mitzvah, so even if it's not a real formal mitzvah, some real tzarcha parnas or something that's really justified. If a guy's just stam going, walking around somewhere, he wants to hide behind Holchei Drachim, so Rav Moshe didn't think that was correct. So only one time in my life I took advantage of this in its fullest sense of the Holchei Drachim term in a sukkah. When we got engaged on Chol HaMoed Sukkos, I flew to California on Chol HaMoed, so I thought that was enough of a justification for the Tzarcha Mitzvah. So when I'm on the plane, so I ate, you go out of washing, regular meals, you're on a plane, it's very hard to build a sukkah on a plane, according to anybody, so you're Holchei Drachim, goes on Mizeh. Every once in a while, when I'd have to schlep sich along on a Chol HaMoed trip or something, so if I wasn't the one who was driving, so I would take a little nap in the car also. Even though you're not really supposed to take a nap outside of the sukkah, but when you holchei drachim and macha mitzvah, so machta tavaisecha, so I thought that was also considered to be enough of a justification to permit taking a little nap. Just back to the story about the sleeping. Even though there are certain justifications not to sleep in the sukkah, for the two reasons that the Ramah gives, I think that only applies to sleeping at night. In the daytime, I don't think there's any head to roll to sleep outside the sukkah. A lot of people are backwards about this. Some people are mocked with the sleep in the sukkah at night, and in the daytime they lay down, they take naps on the couch. That's mamash like it did. So I think that's a bit little mitzvah, the level of their eyesight, to go take a shiyotif afternoon, shabbat afternoon, or day afternoon, chalamoid afternoon, nap outside the sukkah. Mamash, I think that's for sure awesome in the Torah, because both of the coolers of the Ramah usually don't apply. It's usually not so cold, and again, unless it's mamash freezing in the daytime, most of the time the daytime is not all that cold. And the p'tur of married man, so... I don't think that your average married man would ever say, if he's tired, let's say a man's home at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, his wife happens to be at work, he's not going to take a nap because that's just not appropriate. He shouldn't take it. Please don't. Guys take naps all the time. Guys fall asleep in their office. Guys put their head down to the basement. Guys go sleep all the time. They don't call their wife to keep them company. So we assume that even if the Ramah's right about Teishu begin to do, or including your wife, that means when you go to sleep at night, you go to sleep in the daytime. So you take a Shabbos nap. A lot of people never take naps at the same time as the wife. They forget. They're taking turns washing the kids. So at 2 o'clock in the afternoon on Sukkot, it's your turn to take a nap. So you got to go to the Sukkot. I think that person should be more mafia than this. They should arrange the Sukkot such a way that there's some kind of a mattress, something around. It should be easy for them to take at least a short nap in the afternoon. If they're able to, they should try to take a nap in the Sukkot. Even those who, for whatever reason, are being make, they'll not to sleep in the Sukkot. We've been talking a lot about the mitzvah of Shiva B'Sukkah, so I'll try to give just a couple of highlights about what a sukkah is supposed to be made of. And the Gemara tells us, the Mishnayos tell us that there are two components of a sukkah. There's the defanos and there's the so the defanos are the easier of the two, because we pass it at the kolos and defanos. You can make the defanos out of anything. There are no halachic guidelines as to what materials the defanos have to be made of. The only thing is that the defanos have to be strong enough. They can be omer baruch metzuyah. The Gemara says in Sechah Berachot Sukkah, that's the din by all mechitzas. Let's say mechitzah and Shabbos. When you build a mechitzah and Shabbos for Erevin, so the wall has to be strong enough to be able to withstand the normal wind, even though it's not windy or you're inside, whatever it is. It doesn't matter. You have to have a mechitzah that, in theory, can hold up to a wind. So this was a big issue with many of the sukkahs that are built. People build these canvas sukkahs. So the problem is that as soon as it starts to wind blows, the canvas blows. The question is that considered to be a kosher mechitza or not? So the material is not a problem. The problem is it's a potential chisod in the strength of the mechitza. So the Chazinish claims that when the Gemara uses the phrase Yechol Lama Baruch Metzuyah, what that means is that if a wind will come and will topple the mechitza, that's a problem. If the wind will come and just move the mechitza a little bit, says the Chazinish, that's not a problem. As long as the mechitza won't be destroyed, so that's technically okay. The fact the mechitza blows in the wind a little bit, that doesn't concern us. So according to that Chazinish, and then all the canvas mechitzas are fine, all the canvas sukkahs are perfectly okay, because they blow a little bit here, and then they move, they sway in the wind, but they don't fall down the wind. If they fall down, so it means it's very, very windy. That's Rosh Hashanah Metzuyah. But a regular, normal wind is not going to knock down a canvas sukkah. So that would be acceptable according to the Chazinish. Not everyone agreed to the Chazinish, but there are some who don't like to rely on the canvas sukkahs. So what they do is as follows: those people who have canvas sukkahs, so they make a little bit of a make-believe wall, halachic wall, in addition to the canvas. So the Mishnah says in Masechet Erevin that for the purposes of mechitzas, you could build a wall based on the principle of love, with love of Halacha Moshe Mesinai, that anything that's within three tefachim, less than three tefachim one another, is considered to be mechuba yachad. So you could build a mechitza for sukkah. Okay, build a mechitza for sukkah. Instead of building a regular mechitza, you could just take a piece of wood over here and then have a break of 2.9 tefach, another one over here, another 2.9, another one over here, 2.9. As long as you have more than 10 tefach on the top, even though all you have is a little piece of wood, a little string or something, so that would be okay. So that's what a lot of people do, that in addition to the canvas, so they use called a cartel or strings or something, they rope it around from one pole to another, from one of the metal poles to another, these strings within less than 2.9 tefachim from the ground, 7.7, and 1 and 10 tefachim up, and that's okay. So even down the hocha, the wall, means in theory, even if you don't want to count the canvas, even if you want to disagree with the Chazinish, the sukkah will still be kosher based on the strings themselves. That's a very common practice in this matter. How many walls do you need?
What if the string themselves wouldn't move in a rope Metzuya, but now that you have a canvas around them, the canvas moves and will move the strings?
Pushing the strings. I don't know, if you make the strings tight, they probably won't move so much. So you move the canvas.
Let's say your circle is 20 tall, you only do the first 10 tall, you move the strings.
Yeah. Because there's another halacha which seems that the staff doesn't have to rest on the funnels. As long as the schach is above the funnels, that's okay. And we say above the funnels, according to a simple reading in halacha, it's shavna pasuk, that let's say this is my wall, and the schach starts over here. It's not even directly above, but as long as it's less than three tefachim from where the imaginary line is, you can almost draw two imaginary lines. This is what halacha is called good asik, mechitza. That's the halacha makes believe that the mechitza goes up the shemayim. And then Lava tells me that once I reach this point, then I can make another Lava Messina, 2.9 Tvachim, which can connect the two. So that's Shechonach passed it this way. But Kevega claims that there may be some Rishon who disagree with this, but Lamai said Shechonach passed that even this is okay. But for sure, this is the Farish Mishnah, Mishnah is the Farish, that the Schach goes directly above the walls, that's for sure. Okay. That's not a Shechonach, that's a Mishnah in Masechta Sukkah. The chiddush that the Shulchan Aruch quotes from most of the Rishonim is that even if it doesn't go directly, but it goes with the tefachim, that would also be okay. So over here, as long as you have your over here, so your mechitza definitely ends over here, and then you start to stop up here, so that would be perfectly okay. How many walls do you?
Can you sit directly under the 2.9 tefachim imaginary slab?
Can you sit under? I mean, okay, we'll talk in a second. We'll talk about sitting under air in a minute. How many walls do you need? So the first Mishnah in Sukkah says all you need is really three walls. So there's a Chai Adam that claims, based on the Tosfos, that the Medrash Mamurim that you need three walls. That's the three walls suffice. So that's when you have real walls. If you have make believe walls of Lavud, so he has a Chumrim, so a Chumrim Midrabanim, based on a complicated sugya in the first Berakha Me'arvin. Maybe you need four walls. Maybe if you're making believe walls with funny strings in Lavud, so maybe you need a fourth wall. So that's why some people, when they make these Lavud sukkahs, so they try to make it on the straps and the strings on all four sides. The only problem is if you can't make it on the fourth side entirely, because then how are you going to get into the sukkah? You have to jump over the strings. So you don't have to make it on the fourth entire wall. You have to make it on seven tefachim worth of the wall. The sukkah only has to be 7x7. That's what some people try to do. If they have strings all around three sides, and on the fourth side, if you have like on one pole or something, from one pole to the next pole, so it usually gets around seven tefachim. That's already a chumrah. This is all assuming against the Chazanish. Quite the Chazanish. It's kosher the way it is. So those who rely just on the Chazanish, not to argue with the Chazanish, but those who didn't want to rely on just Chazanish, then they insist on making all these kinds of awesome, etc. The most of Ilchus Sukkah govern the Schach rather than the Defanos. So the Schach, the Mishnah tells us, we have a tradition, has to be made out of specific material. It has to be something that's Einam HaKapal Tumah. It has to be something that's Gidul HaMin HaAretz. And it has to be something that's not Mechubal HaAretz anymore. So that's pretty much any kind of wood, leaves, those kinds of materials are perfectly okay. But again, you have to make sure all those issues are kept, not HaKapal Tumah, etc. So there is a big machlekes hatanoim, machlekes rishayim, the whole tiyun in Shulchan Aruch. Now, what's the din the following case? Let's say I have kosher schach, but the kosher schach is being held up by puzzle, by something puzzle. So let's say I have metal rods, which is obviously puzzle schach, and I throw my wooden piece, I throw my bamboo, my branches on top of the metal rods. So should that be a problem or not? So that's what we call ma'amid b'davar makabel tuma. So according to most of the rishayim, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. What's problem? I'm not using the rods as the metal as schach. I'm using the metal as support. So I have plenty. I have enough kosher schach in this. So forget about the metal. That's what most of the Rishonim hold. And there's one opinion to be shown based in the sugya in the Sechel Berachah Masechta Sukkah that maybe there's some kind of a problem of ma'amid b'davar makabel tuma. What could the problem be? So the further machlokes, assuming there's a problem, is it a problem deraisa or a problem derabbanan? So some suggest maybe it's a chashash deraisa, because maybe if A is ma'amid B, so A and B almost become like one. We know all the characteristics of A to B. Or do I say, no, even if you hold Mavid as a problem, it's only a problem with the Rabbanan, because it's a Gezeir Hashema, you may come to use the Mavid as the Schach itself. The Halacha, do we pass that the Mavid is not a problem? That the whole thing is not a problem. That's the Ikikar I did. But since not everyone agrees to that, so therefore the Poskim, we try to be Cheshish, not to have Mavid. So we try, not only is the Schach kosher, we try that which is holding up the Schach is also okay. So then there was a big machlokes between the Magen Avraham and the Chazon Ish about what if I have a Dover Apostle L'Schach that's not directly holding up the Schach. It's holding up something which in turn is holding up the Schach. So do you say that's what's called Ma'amid D'Ma'amid? We coined a new phrase called Ma'amid D'Ma'amid, and that's for sure okay, according to everybody. Or do I say no, that Ma'amid D'Ma'amid is the same as regular Ma'amid? So the Magen Avraham was makel on that. That's what most people follow, that Magen Avraham, when they build their sukkahs. So a lot of people have, especially if you have canvas sukkahs, so you have those metal rods on top, and the schach goes onto the top of the rods. What people do is they'll take a little piece of wood or something, and they'll put it first, they'll put the piece of wood on top of the metal, and then they'll place the schach on top of the wood. So that chumrah of placing the schach on top of the wood, which is on top of the metal, is in order to satisfy the view of the Magen Avraham that ma'amid d'ma'amid would be okay according to everybody. So the Chazon Ish says, if you really hold ma'amid's a problem, then that's also a problem. But the Chazon Ish happens to say, we don't really paskin ma'amid anyway. It's just a lechatchila, it's just a chumrah v'yalma. So mikra din is kosher. So the bottom line is, if you have the wood, you don't have the wood, the sukkah is kosher the way it is. Lechatchila, most people have that practice that they should try to avoid having the schach resting directly on the metal if possible. They should have it rest on some other piece of wood, which in turn is resting on the metal. There are a lot of problems with schach puzzle floating around. One of the biggest, the biggest problem with schach puzzle is trees. If a person puts a sukkah under a tree, that's a whole Mishnah in Masechta Sukkah about also sukkah tachas ilan. That's a big, big problem. So there's no solution to that problem except cutting down the branches of the tree and moving the sukkah. So people get, if you live in the suburbs, this is a nightmare, because people have a lot of trees all over the place. So you have to situate your sukkah in such a place where it's not under a tree. The tree is 100 feet up in the air. There's no shear. If you still see it, it's in outer space, if there's a tree flying, that doesn't bother us. But as long as you can still see it up in Shemayim, so then that's a problem. So one has to be very careful not to situate your sukkah in an area which is directly under a tree. It's not always so easy to tell whether something's under a tree. So you have to try to You have to get yourself a laser gun or something, try to figure out how to, or just get a guy to cut down part of the tree. It's not so simple to figure this out. So try to make it that it's clear, legitimately clear, of any tree issues. It doesn't matter. It's still a problem. If the sukkah is what's called tzilsum rumichamsa, that is the more shade than sunlight from the schach itself, and the branches that are hanging over are only chamsum rumitzilsa, so technically that's a sukkah tachas ilum. The only problem is that many rishonim say whatever is connected, the branches of the sukkah is considered to be like schach posel. So you can't sit under that part. So if you have three quarters of your sukkah schach posel, it's going to be a very, very tough sukkah. It's going to be hung in one corner. So it's probably not the best idea. Yeah, that's what some people like to do that, but some people get a little nervous about that. Okay, good. Okay, let's say you have a sukkah that's kosher. You have all your kosher schach, and then you have a little bit of schach puzzle thrown in there also. So, what does that do for you? Does that harm you or not? So it depends how much schach puzzle you have. So let's say
bird's eye view of the sukkah over here. So this is all schach kosher and all. Also bamboo over here, right? Not a lot of bamboo. And then all of a sudden right here, you have this like metal stuff running right across the middle of the sukkah. So does this pose a problem or not? So the Gemara says that it depends on how wide this is. If this is more than 4 tefachim, so then that's considered to be a dabra mafsik. This breaks up the continuity of the sukkah. So you just deny yourself two sukkahs. So the good news is that, well, this has to be more than this has to be more, so you have two kosher sukkahs. The problem is, let's say you only started out with a three-wall sukkah, and you had, you had metal going across over here, one of the four tefachim, so you just break up your sukkah. But this is still a kosher sukkah, but this is not a kosher sukkah, you only have two walls to it. So if you have one of the four tefachim, that's a problem. Let's say it's less than four tefachim. Less than four tefachim, that's not a bachim kosher, but therefore it doesn't break up the continuity of the sukkah. It's not miyacha. There is a machlekes that we showed you, but you're allowed to sit under that tzach posel or not. So even according to the Machmirim, that's only if it's more than three tefachim. Less than three tefachim, that's for sure, okay. So you know, very often in sukkahs we have certain things on top. Let's say you have the metal poles, you have other things floating around. They're very rarely less than three tefachim wide. So lechatchil, you can sit mamish under it also. It's not a problem. The only time if it's more than three tefachim wide, less than four tefachim wide, that's machlekes of sharif, and you sit under it. It's more than four tefachim wide, that is a total disaster. There is a special halacha Moshe Mesinai that, let's say, the schach posel is very close to the walls. If it's within dal amos of all amos, which is a pretty large amount, so then we have a special halacha Mesinai called Dofen Akuma. Dofen Akuma means that we have a right to make believe that the wall bends over. So the schach posel now becomes part of the wall, and it doesn't disqualify the sukkah up to a distance of dal amos away from the wall. You know, the thing is, you can't sit under that. Because if you sit under that, then you're sitting under the wall, you're sitting under the schach. So people have this, very often they have this. It's a very common scenario in a sukkah. If they have, using one of the walls of the house or something, and they open this ledge, air conditioning, other things that are hanging out, jutting out over the side. The sukkah, you know, they have sach over here, under the ledge, whatever it is, so you shouldn't sit directly over here, but you can still use this wall. This wall still counts towards the sukkah. Normally, if you have a wall to sukkah, there's a break of more than three tefachim. But when the schach begins, that's a problem. But if you have, not airspace, you have schach posel, so as long as it's close enough to the wall, you have a total of dal amos before that's going to pose a problem. Let's say somebody asked before about sitting on the air. Let's have a little bit of airspace in the schach itself. So how much airspace is the problem? So here the Gemara tells us that the shear is three tefachim. Different shear. That three tefachim. If you have three tefachim of airspace, that breaks up the continuity of the sukkah. But even if it's less than three tefachim, you're not supposed to sit under that. That's pasha, the diminator. You have a big, significant airspace, so you shouldn't be sitting under that airspace, even if that airspace doesn't ruin the sukkah. How big is the airspace to disqualify sitting under it? All airspaces, all sukkahs have cracks, and none of the schach is perfect. So the Rambam writes that if you have an airspace that goes across the entire sukkah, so that's considered to be a problem. If you have an airspace that doesn't really go anywhere, so that's not a problem. That's why some have a practice, they throw a couple of pieces of schach in the other direction. If you throw one or two poles going in the other direction, then you, by definition, won't have an airspace going across the whole sukkah. So again, some do that, some don't do that, whatever it is. But if you don't have a real significant airspace, so that's not going to be a problem. Then you can maybe sit under the airspace itself. Okay, any other questions about it?
Does a Jew have to make the sukkah for you to be able to?
Okay, good question. Okay, so the din is that technically speaking, if a goy builds a sukkah, the sukkah is kosher also. But the Rishami says that you're supposed to be mechadish davar lechadchila, you're supposed to put up part of the schach. So if the goy put up the whole sukkah, you should take down a little bit of the schach, a couple of pieces of the schach, and you should throw them back up again. There are some poskim who say that lechadchila only applies if the goy made the sukkah on his own. If you hired him, he's your worker, let's say in the shul. That's his job to build the sukkah. So some poskim say, if he's acting clearly on behalf of the Jews, then that lechad chila wouldn't, even that lechad chila wouldn't apply. That's many shuls rely on that when they know that or not. Yeah.
What about decorations? Like, what's the
reason
behind them? And also, are they considered?
Yeah. Okay, so lechad chila is supposed to put up decorations. The Gemara describes these to decorate the sukkah because that's no mitzvah. That's hidden mitzvah. The only thing is, the Gemara says that you have to be careful. Most of the decorations we use are posel schach, either because they're real fruit or they're plastic fruit, all the stuff is all posel schach. So you have to be careful that all the decorations should be within 4 tefachim of the schach. You shouldn't have anything hanging down too far. As long as it's within 4 tefachim of the schach, it's bottled to the schach. So that's what the practice is. You just try to keep the decorations fairly high.
Somebody has like a whole office, let's say. Should they be doing that right in the sukkah?
Yeah, should be doing everything in the sukkah. You're supposed to be doing everything that you would normally do in your house. You're supposed to do in the sukkah. Even if you want to schmooze with somebody, you're supposed to be schmoozing in the sukkah. Everything should be in the sukkah. I remember when we got engaged on the Chol Hamoed Sukkos, so I told my wife that I should propose in the sukkah, because it says Perish Din Shulchan Aruch. It says in Shulchan Aruch that if you want to schmooze with somebody, what's the siach and chaveroi, you siach b'sukkah. So I said we have to get engaged in the sukkah. But one of my brothers-in-law at the time was learning in the sukkah, so I felt that was like a little bit of terror to throw him out so I should get engaged. So I went outside the sukkah. So that was it. There was no fanfare, there was no YouTube, there was no show, there was a 3-minute proposal, and sure, Baruch Hashem was still happily married, Baruch Hashem. And, you don't need all the other stuff. The old stuff just attracts. Yeah.
I know there are some, questioning their authority, who say, since the mitzvahs teeth, because I started, or commands of Dagon,
so
they make the
bracha
when they
make
hamotzi rather than a kiddush.
I think the Minhag Yisrael is clearly not that way. No, most people don't do that. No?
People do it. I've seen
that. There's a machlekes, the Rambam and Rabbi Natam, when you should make a leisha b'sukkah. The Rambam holds you should make a leisha b'sukkah and then with eating. The Rambam says you make a leisha b'sukkah when you walk into the sukkah, you should make a leisha b'sukkah. That's when the mitzvah starts. So Rabbi Natam's sheet is that you hold off the leisha b'sukkah until the eating, because it's the main part of the yeshiva. So I think we usually assume that making kiddush is already the beginning of the meal, even a quench of a time. That would be okay. I think that's what most people do. That's what it says in the venture. It says the same. I think so.
Are there any laws concerning tying the schach down to the sukkah?
Yeah, so the problem is if you tie down the schach, there may be a shot of ma'amir. So if you tie it down with something that's makabel tuma, so that would be a chashash of ma'amir. Again, ma'amir mikvah din is kosher. So I would tell people like this, you should try to tie it down with something that's not makabel tuma. So the best thing to do is just, instead of tying it down, take a 2x4 or something, a piece of wood, and throw it on top of the schach, they'll do the same trick. So that's not davar makabel tuma, that would be okay. Those who have to tie it down, if they could tie it down with something which is not makabel tuma, great. If they have to tie it down with something that is makabel tuma, then they're relying on the mekilim. It's better that, if otherwise the schach is going to fly away, so then you're going to have no sukkah, so it's better than nothing. Well, the chachilah should try to hold it down with something that's not makabel tuma. That was all shadow, all the part of the shadow with all the mats, all the schach mats. So there were two issues with the schach mats when they first came out. So there were some who felt that it was a chashash of ma'amir v'davar makabel tuma, because the original mats were held together with some kind of a string that was potentially makabel tuma. So at the time, some of the companies, some of the poskim were saying that that's not ma'amir, because the mat would stay in place anyway. If we just put it down, it'll stay in place just by itself. The string just keeps everything a little bit more masudar, but it's not really going anywhere anyway. Maybe that's not considered to be ma'amid. So some of the later innovations in the schach mats, so they started to make them with natural fibers, with reeds or something, rather than with string, rather than something that could be chashashim or kabel tuma. So that overcame that problem. There was another issue that was raised about the mat, was that maybe the mat itself is makabel tuma, because even though it's shutikliyates, even though it's made out of a flat piece of wood, which is generally not makabel tuma, the exception to the rule is if somebody sits on it, somebody lays on it, then it's makabel tumas mishka v'moshav, tumas medris. So the fear was that maybe these mats are something that's really kaf for people to sleep on. So the Mishnah in the Gemara, in the end of the first Berachah of Sukkah, talks about this. It says it depends what it was made for. If it was made for the purpose of sleeping on, then it's tachem makabel tumas pasul min ha'Torah. If it was made to use for schach, then it's okay. So what are these mats made for? So these mats are made for schach, maybe. So they're made for schach by the person who presses the button. Somebody out in China is making the mats. So we're standing there pressing a button and saying, these are for schach, this is not to sleep on. Because some rabbi is telling him to say that. So some, when the mats first came out, so some were aware of that. Maybe the guy doesn't understand what the rabbi's talking about. Maybe the guy thinks the Jews really want to sleep on this. He doesn't really chat that this is for sukkah. So some were concerned about the mats. And the Minig Yisrael was pretty make on the mats. They weren't as concerned about that. Okay, anything else left?
Under the decoration.
So if they're within four tefachim of the schach, then it's perfectly okay. If they're hanging down more than four tefachim, so if they're less than three tefachim wide or something, so then mikra din, it's okay. Chila, it's better not to, but mikra din, it's okay. Okay. I thought maybe we'd just finish up a little bit of divrei service. The Rambam writes in the end of Hilchos Lulav that kavadi of the folks smachtem of neshem makech mishivas yamim. So you see that there's a special mitzvah of extra simcha on sukkahs dafka b'mikdash. The Rambam writes that the whole simcha is based on sheyeva that the Mishnah describes in the end of the sukkah was the fulfillment of this pasuk. Smachtem of neshem makech mishivas yamim. Not like Rashi. Rashi says in the Sechah Sukkah that the simple Meshaveva was a fulfillment of the Pasuk Shafta Mayim Besos and Mayim Shul. When you do Nisach HaMayim, you have to have a special Simcha. So according to Rashi, it's the mitzvah of Nisach HaMayim, it's the Mechayiv of the Simcha Yisera. But according to the Ram, it's the Etzim Kedisha Sayoim is Mechayiv of Smachtam, Fresh and Gechem, not just to take a lulav of 7 days, but to have a special added dimension of Simcha. So the Rambam describes it as being Yimei Simcha Yaseira, days of great, great, overabundant joy, the days of Sukkot. And we, of course, reflect this in Adavin and Kiddush, but things not Simcha Yaseira. What is the source exactly for this idea? Why is it conceptually that Sukkot is such a tremendous man Simcha? So perhaps you can understand this in light of another Rambam, a Rambam that appears in the context of Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, the Rambam of Hilchos Chanukah, where he discusses the not saying of Hallel and Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Mar says, Efshe Sifcha Chayv Simcha Sukkot Fon Vatemba Mshira. So the Rambam writes, when he paraphrases that Gemara, he writes that Rosh Hashanah and Kippur are not Yimei Simcha Yaseira, they're not days of great joy. So the Poskim and Medayik and the Rambam, they are days of joy. There is Simchas Yontif on Rosh Hashanah and Kippur. Haraya, they cancel Avelos, but in terms of Simcha Yaseira, they're not. So perhaps what Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur are lacking, that's what Sukkah is being mashlim. Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur are days of Simcha, but they're not Simcha Yaseira. So that Simcha Yaseira now reaches fruition, really comes into life on Sukkah. So the great Simcha of Sukkah is almost a response to the lack of the great Simcha of Rosh Hashanah and Kippur. What's the connection between the two? So the answer is obvious, that the whole reason why Rosh Hashanah and Kippur are not Yimei Simcha Yaseira is because the Rambam says Yimei Pachad, because how can a person realistically be in Simcha Yaseira when Sifrei Misa of Sukkah Lufanam, if he's afraid that who knows what the year is going to bring. So that's a tremendous source of pachad. That source of pachad prevents him from reaching the point of what would otherwise be expected of Simcha Yaseira, and therefore he cannot say Hallel. So once that pachad is lifted, so then the Simcha Yaseira now comes into being. How is that pachad lifted? Because Medrash says that on the first day of Sukkot, when Klal Yisrael shake the lulav, so Medrash gives a mashal. It's like a mashal of the Vadayim, a person goes out to war, and the person's coming back from the war, and you can't tell, did they win, did they lose? So they start to wave their swords, and like that victory, they're having a victory parade. So that's a simon that they won the war. So that's what the Medrash says, that we go out to war. Rosh Hashanah and Kippur, we're battling for our neshamas, we're battling for our lives, and we don't know whether we won or not. So the Baruch Shalom says, first day of Sukkah, shake the lulav, and the lulav is the banner that the Baruch Shalom said, you won, you guys won, you made it through the year, you made it through Rosh Hashanah and Kippur. So that simcha that starts out with the first day of Sukkot is almost a letting up of all that pent-up emotion, all that pachad, all that tension that we had for the whole time of Rosh Hashanah and Kippur. So now that that tension lifts from the air, and with a tremendous, tremendous simcha, now it takes us over. So that's Takus Machtim, Rosh Hashanah and Kippur. So the only way that a person can really experience the Simcha of Sukkah is if you experience the Pachad of Rosh Hashanah Kippur. If a guy goes to Rosh Hashanah Kippur with no Pachad at all, and then he's dancing away and bouncing around Sukkah Beis Shuevas, there's something missing over there. So the Pachad, you may have been, you may hear of a Pachad of whatever's left, the highlight, the crescendo of the Sesame Chuvah Yom Kippurim, that will hopefully set in motion the ability to be able to reach the great Simcha of Usmach and Hashem Kechem is Yom, we should be Zaycha, that possibly be Mekurim Kipshuto, Fnei Hashem Kechem, Karo, and Meher Yom. Okay, church, wish everybody a Gmach Simcha Tovah, a wonderful Yom Tov. When does she start again?
Thursday, okay, I want you to get